Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Final hour of Grant and Danny. It is a Friday, which means Football Friday, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. We'll be getting back into the Nats in just a few with Charlie Slows, who's going to give us a shout from Nationals Park, where he's getting ready for the workout, which is open today to the media. Yesterday, they had a closed workout, got back into the flow of running around at the park. Today, they're actually doing some baseball activities in front of cameras. Let's go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Welcome Craig Hoffman onto the show. He's our Redskins beat reporter. Craig, I'm sure you heard some of the Jay Gruden interview today. What stood out? What did you take away one way or the other?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what I expected. I think there was a couple of new pieces of information. The officials at practice thing we can get into because I think it's interesting, his answer on that. But overall, I mean, it sounded like what he had said all along. If he had just been able to get the players that he wanted to design everything around and the high-dollar players that they had who were really talented on the field, he feels like he could have won here. And you know what? He's probably right about that. But that's the NFL, is the ability to adapt. And there just aren't enough good players to go around to replace, as he said, a Lamborghini with a Honda. When you have a Honda, you got to figure out how to drive a Honda. And that ultimately is, I think, why Jay is no longer here, is you can never figure out quite how to drive the Hondas.
Yeah, to that point, Craig, there's always this tug of war between my system, my thing, my design is so good versus, you know, square peg, round hole with a player. Do you think Jay Gruden did enough to adapt to the players that he had?
No. I mean, he was 0-5. And it's not that I think Jay's a bad football coach. And let me actually just say this real quick on the front end. Like, Jay is one of the smartest football minds, X's and O's wise, that I've ever been around. And, like, I was here when McVay was here, and I've been around O'Connell, and I've been around some of these really, really smart people. Jay can talk ball and design offense and all that stuff with any of them. And you ask any of those guys on or even off the record about Jay, and they'll tell you he's brilliant as an offensive mind. Jay Gruden has forgotten more football than the three of us will ever know. But that's not all that it takes to be a head coach. It's the ability to translate that knowledge to your players and have them go out and execute it on the field. And that's where Jake never really kind of figured it out, was he never figured out how to adjust his teaching to make the brilliance of his football mind come to life. And if you just keep going, and this is like the officials thing, you know, if you just keep doing the same thing and going, oh man, if we can just get lucky with these guys staying healthy, then this is going to work. That's not going to be good enough in the NFL. The margins are too small. So, like, for instance, you know, the reason I think the officiating thing is so interesting is because he goes, well, who are they? If they're not the officials we have on Sundays, then who cares? Well, what Callahan has done is brought in these officials, said, hey, the crew that we have on Sunday calls a ton of X, this penalty. Please watch for this in practice and be really, really strict about it. Okay, got it. So they go out there, and now the coaches can coach, and they don't have to worry about officiating practice. And by the way, let's say Callahan has been coaching hand placement in a certain way, and all of a sudden an official with an outside eye calls it a penalty in practice. They can adjust, and they can have a conversation with the official. Why did you think that was holding? That's exactly the way we coached it. So it prevents you from coaching penalties. And the unwillingness to be flexible on some of that stuff and to be welcoming of new ideas and different ways of doing things, I think ultimately is why Jay is no longer here, because he never could quite make those adjustments despite how brilliant he is at scheme and all of those kinds of things.
Craig Hoffman on Grant and Danny here on 106.7. The Fan is our Redskins beat reporter. Let's get into the matchup on Sunday with the 49ers. When you research, learn about, ask questions, and watch them this week, how are they 5-0? What are they doing?
I mean, they're just really good on both sides of the ball. Defensively, the first thing that pops is their talent. I mean, they got five first-rounders up front, and you know, we know how powerful and how forceful a good front can be and the effect that it has on the rest of the defense. Like, they're good on the back end and all, but those dudes up front get pressure. They don't lose a lot in the run game. They don't, you know, they quickly get off the field again and again and again and again, and that allows them to stay fresh throughout the game. And that is complemented by a rushing attack on offense that is incredibly versatile. I mean, it's very much like what the Redskins want to be, where they just run the ball out of a bunch of different formations, a bunch of different ways. They have zone plays. They have man gap scheme type of plays. They run inside. They run outside. And they're physical as hell. I mean, I was watching a little bit of their game back with the Rams this morning, and there's a blitz pickup where one of their backs, I mean, like, you know, if you watch tape of the Redskins anytime over the last couple of years, a lot of times four offensive linemen would be right in the quarterback's face, and then Trent Williams would be on an island because he's the only one who is good enough to consistently do his job to that level where he's maintaining or even creating a new line of scrimmage forward. One of their running backs did that in a blitz pickup. Like, they are physical, and they will hit you in the mouth at every single position. The receivers block their asses off. They just have a really physical way of playing that is trademark Shanahan, and the diversity that is also trademark Shanahan. And that's kind of what has come up this week in conversation is we got to be prepared for everything, because they will figure out, they will prepare everything, figure out what they can get you on, and then they will just hammer that thing time and time again until you figure it out, and then they'll hit you with something else.
At Craig Hoffman on Twitter, got to give him a follow if you care about the Redskins. Craig, dinosaurs and old men who you parrot things they've heard before will yell about winning the turnover battle and establishing running game and rush attempts and the things like that is the keys to success. For years, everyone that's studied stats and statistical models has known that yards per play in terms of the pass, having a great advantage there, meaning yards that you complete minus sacks and completions, etc., having that advantage over your opponent is the greatest indicator of success in the NFL. I bring this up because San Francisco has dominated in that stat this year. They have the greatest differential between when they drop back to pass and what the opponent does when they drop back to pass, even better than New England, Minnesota, Kansas City, etc. I'm wondering, how are they so efficient in the pass game, and what have they done to stop people on defense?
Yeah, it's a great point, Danny. And it actually is interesting because, you know, when Callahan came up and said, well, rush attempts is super important, I think a lot of people actually missed him also saying rushing attempts and completions, a.k.a. how often can we move the ball forward? And that's why that stat is so important. Can you stay in front of the chains and make things easy? Because second and four is a really easy down to do anything you want. You have to protect against the first down, which also leaves you vulnerable to big plays. And so the idea of, hey, let's just make sure we're consistently going forward is exactly how this offense for San Francisco is set up. So they run the ball. Their play actions look like they're run. So, you know, they suck you in a little bit. And then it's easy, you know, hey, we got a tight end coming across right behind your linebackers, and it's easy. Well, all of a sudden, that tight end is not some lumbering dock. It's George Kittle, who's really freaking fast and can run after the catch and make huge, ginormous, game-changing type plays. So they make things really easy. They're so good at the screen game. They use screens off of misdirection. Like, they're just a really, really well-designed offense, and that keeps the defense flowing and often the wrong way, and that leaves a ton of space. And that's ultimately what you're trying to do in the NFL, is because these players are so fast, because they're so good, because they understand where they're supposed to be. If you can create an extra 2 yards of a window for Jimmy Garoppolo, you made his job 100% easier. And so that's what Kyle is so good at scheme-wise, and how they've been able to do that is when they pass, they try to make it pretty easy on the looks, whether it's screen game, you know, play action over the middle, stuff that's over the ball, as the term is called, so over the middle where you don't have to scan all the way to the outside. And that kind of stuff is kind of the staple of the San Francisco offense and has kept them moving forward continuously until they find the end zone all year.
Gruden said on the show today that his plan was to redshirt Dwayne Haskins for the whole season. I think, you know, reading between the lines, a lot of people kind of speculated he didn't want to play him and it was going to be a while, but we hadn't heard he was literally not going to start him this season unless he had to based on injury. I'm curious if you still think that'll be the case now with him gone, Bruce and Dan theoretically having more power, and Bill Callahan, who's a Bruce disciple, running the show.
Well, the other part of Jay's answer on that was, you know, we'd hope that Case would take the job and run with it, and obviously that hasn't happened. So I think there's two things that are happening here. One, they've adjusted the development path for Dwayne, where they're giving him more reps. Wednesday, when Case is out injured, you know, they give him the entirety of the reps instead of what Jay would have probably done, which is going, oh, we got to make sure Colt's ready just in case, and giving Cole some reps. So I got, pretty sure Casey could be fine. And if not, Dwayne's a backup at this point. So let's give him 100% of the reps. And, oh, by the way, it's good for his development. But the other part of that is being better than Case Keenum has been a lot easier than people have expected. They expected Case to come in and play well, and that's why Jay thought, hey, if he comes in and plays well, like maybe we have a chance at the playoffs. Obviously, that's what Bruce meant by, quote-unquote, we're close. Like, we just have a veteran quarterback, comes in and operates, we stay healthy, boom, we're a playoff team. And that has gone not well in any of the above categories. And so getting Dwayne to a point now where he is better than Case is a much lower bar than Jay's initial plan and anybody in this organization's initial plan was. So, yeah, I do think that's going to change. I do think Dwayne winds up playing by the end of the year, although it's probably a couple more weeks till that happens.
Greg, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it.
You got it. See you guys.
See you, my friend.
Craig Hoffman. He's out in Ashburn covering the Redskins for us day in and day out on the beat. Next, our Nationals voice here on 106.7 The Fan, who's kept you company in the evening all year long. Charlie Slows stops by. He's at Nationals Park. Looking forward to hearing what he thinks about what this team should do as it aligns itself for the World Series. He's Danny, I'm Grant, this is The Fan. We are presented today on this Football Friday by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game and every bet for real sports fans. I'm going to catch up with our buddy Charlie Slows over at Nationals Park in just a few. Charlie and Dave, Bob, and FP, the whole crew, are over at the ballpark with the media right now because the Nats are back to work. You have to imagine they're still kind of awaking from their slumber, literally right, and figuratively, after a party that went deep into the night after they clinched. Charlie, the lay of the land today is what? Are they actually doing baseball activities and having a full practice? You don't see that very often after spring training.
Well, a couple of days off today. They have an open workout at the park at 3 o'clock, so we're going to see exactly what they go through. I'm sure this little break helped some guys who needed a break, certainly the starting pitchers who were leaned on heavily, and probably as well Sean Doolittle and our closer at the back end there who was heavily used as well, Daniel Hudson.
Charlie, what about the guys that it might affect negatively? I'm thinking of the hitters most specifically. Pitchers could probably use the rest and they'll get their bullpen work in, but it's just so hard to replicate that timing of being in a major league batting box against, you know, top flight big league pitching. How do they not get rusty? It's affected a lot of teams in the past.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we've seen the numbers on teams that have had six or more days off. I mean, everyone brings up the Colorado Rockies of 07, but they actually had 8 days off after winning the National League Championship and then lost. I think they got wiped out in four straight by the Red Sox in the series. So, yeah, that's happened. You know, you're right. I think it affects the hitters more than the pitchers for timing, and maybe we'll find out this afternoon if they're going to do anything that replicate simulated games, maybe with some of the pitchers who aren't on the roster for the division series to keep them sharp in case someone has to be added to the roster, or some of the relievers who are on the roster, or even would a starting pitcher use that as kind of his bullpen, a bit of a sim game combination here in the next day or two. Because right now, it looks as though if Houston wraps this up today, it's possible the Nationals could travel on Sunday. It's more likely to be on Monday, but it could be Sunday if this series ends early just to get situated there. That all remains to be seen. I like the idea if these two teams just beat each other up and go seven games and Houston has to burn Gerrit Cole to maybe try and win the series. I think that might give the Nationals an advantage starting the World Series.
Charlie, speaking of starting the World Series, how do you see the rotation, the four arms who have been used in these playoffs lining up for Washington?
That's interesting. I'm sure that's going to be a question Davey Martinez gets, one of the first questions he gets asked today. How will you line up your rotation? Because for the first time since the wild card game, they have a chance to do that because they weren't able to do that going into the division series because you used Strasburg for three innings in relief. So you started the division series with Corbin. Then you used Corbin in relief. So then you started the league championship series with Anibal Sanchez. Now they can line them up any way they want to set it up for how they want the beginning of the series and the end of the series. So, I mean, if you're going with your opening day rotation, it would be Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, and Anibal Sanchez, but remains to be seen whether they'll actually start out or run through the four that way.
Charlie Slow is with us. You can hear every game on 106.7 The Van. Charlie and Dave will be doing the play-by-play. Charlie, who's going to DH in your mind in these games in Houston?
Interesting. I hadn't given that a whole lot of thought, but you have several players to pick from. It could be Drubal Cabrera, who's a switch hitter. Maybe he plays the field, and Howie Kendrick DHs for a game. They could go that way if they want to give Howie a little bit off his legs, the advantage to do that with a DH. If you want to get Matt Adams in there, you have an option that way, too, coming off the bench. So I think likely it's one of those two. I think more likely it's Cabrera because he bats from either side of the plate.
I was looking at the numbers for the Astros' big three starting pitchers, and they all have higher batting averages against right-handers than left-handers, even though they're right-handed. Not anything crazy, but, you know, in some cases, 20 points higher righties hit off of them. I wonder if that would get Brian Dozier a start or if it is just down to those two lefties, the switch hitter, Cabrera, obviously left-handed, like you say, because I thought that too, and then I look up the numbers. I don't know if the sample's big enough or if that's something Davey would care enough about.
Well, they'll look at it. I mean, when Kendrick and Zim started hitting the ball, they were right on right against everybody. So the matchups, right-left analytics, whatever, I think kind of went out the window because you were riding veteran hot hitters that, you know, when they're on top of their game, that's the best lineup that you could put forth, especially Kendrick giving the protection behind Soto and then Zimmerman behind him. But obviously you have one more spot in the batting order that you have to play with. So that's another way. If you want to start Brian Dozier, again, you could move Kendrick to a DH spot and still have all those other hitters off the bench. It's going to give you one less hitter off the bench, but that hitter is going to be in the game the entire time. So, you know, a lot of times you look at teams that are set up as National League clubs and you go to the American League rules for the DH and figure that that American League team has the advantage of more hitters who've been in that DH role or someone they've rotated in there all year long. I think when they go to the National League park, the Nationals will have an advantage because the Astros will lose a big bat out of their lineup.
Charlie, speaking of big bats, Houston, I'm kind of assuming Houston here. They've looked like the better team, and they're up 3-1 here. So let's just say for the sake of argument, it's them. Alex Bregman, I mean, Jose Altuve, Gurriel, you look at Correa, who hit 7th last night, Michael Brantley, Yordan Alvarez. These are great hitters. This lineup is deep. They don't strike out anywhere near as much as, say, the Yankees or some other teams do. They make you come in the zone, and they work counts, and they're so lethal. How do you get through a lineup like this? How do you do what the Nationals have done all postseason long, which is have starters go deep into games to, you know, not have to use the Wander Suero's of the world?
Yeah, you're right. They are a better contact hitting team, put the ball in play. The Yankees, I thought if the Nationals were going to face them, were more like the Dodgers, you know, high home run, high strikeout ratio ball club, which might play more into the hands of the Nationals starting pitching. But, you know, the Nationals pitchers have pretty much been at their best. They're going to have to continue to make pitches. They'll be very conscious of scouting reports and how to pitch it. But, you know, again, for everyone, for Verlander, for Cole, it all comes down to making your pitches. And for hitters, if there's a mistake, whether you can take advantage of it. So, I mean, it'll be very, very interesting. Of course, the Astros play in a bandbox, especially if the roof is closed at Minute Maid Park, and you've got the short porch in left field with the Crawford boxes. And, you know, Juan Soto hits the ball the other way to left field. That'll be an advantage for him. We know we can hit it out that way.
Charlie, how are you holding up voice-wise? How are you taking care of the pipes with the change of weather and the late nights?
That's been a little bit of a challenge this week. I'm still working on it right now. A lot of hot tea.
Hot tea? What about lozenges? What? Any tricks to the trade?
No, I just start with one thing, see how it works, and then try and pick several hours of the day where I don't talk to anyone.
Antisocial behavior is the key to recovery. I like it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I had a plan for tonight that I had to call off.
Oh, no, we lost Charlie.
See, he's done talking to us. See, he's already done.
He just said, I've had enough words for today.
I've used the voice enough.
I'm not going to use any more of it on you guys. So there you go, Charlie Slows, getting us ready for the World Series. The Red October continuing, presented by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable business grows with PVI. Visit their showroom in Frederick, Maryland, or online at PVI.com today. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Look at the NFL schedule. Pull some of the games we like out and look at what's on the line. Plus, Dante Whitner was on the Junkies earlier today. We had Jay Gruden on. Got some good sound clips we'll play for you next. In our final segment on Grant and Danny, we'll make our predictions for the Redskins and the 49ers. Look ahead to what's going to have to happen if the Yankees are going to take on the Nats instead of the Astros in the World Series. Make our predictions on the ALCS as well. But right now, pleased to go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline and welcome onto the show the all-time leader in consecutive NFL games with an interception and a guy who in the 94 NFC Championship game torched the Cowboys with a pick six and a fumble recovery and forced fumble. So he is always welcome in D.C. Eric Davis, who's doing a podcast on the 49ers where San Francisco is getting ready to make the trip to D.C. to take on the Redskins. Eric, it's Grant and Danny. Thanks for the time.
Hey, no problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Pleasure,
appreciate
buddy.
A couple of minutes. Are you surprised that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have this thing rolling as well as they do after a couple of down years, some injuries at quarterback? San Francisco, all of a sudden, is one of the top three or four teams in the league.
You know what? I'm surprised that everything came together so quickly. That's it. I mean, they've been bringing in solid players. You know, they've been going after – you look at the guys that they've brought in. Like John Lynch drafts big bodies. I mean, that's what George Seifert used to do. That's what Bill Walsh used to do. They were going – they always figured if you're going to take a shot, don't take a shot at a skill guy, you know, a small guy that can get injured. Go for the big bodies. They're more durable. They last longer. And you have a better chance of them being what you believe that they're going to be. So they've done that. But then you go out and you get some free agents. You know, you go out, you get Quan Alexander. You get D Ford. You draft another guy. You draft both as a speed guy. But it's just a question of how fast these guys have come together up front. And Sherm is doing what I thought he was going to do in the secondary. He's helping the young guys understand how to be pros. So that's the shocking part, that is all coming together so quickly.
Well, Eric, for me, I assumed or I figured that once Kyle Shanahan gets a couple toys on offense, they would put up some numbers. What I'm really surprised by is this defense being as nasty as it has been. They don't allow an awful lot of anything. They're pretty good against the run, but they're even better against the pass. How did that kind of come to fruition this year? Has it been working towards that?
Yeah, you know, that's what I was just speaking of, because I'm with you. I expected Kyle Shanahan to be able to get an offense going. Every place he's ever been, he's been able to get the offense going. And that's what I was really touching on defensively. They brought in these pieces, and people were concerned, like, you know, why aren't these high number one draft picks showing what they can do? And now that they've put all these pieces together and these guys understand their roles, which is a very, very important part of having a good football team. Guys have to understand their role. They have to take pride in their role, and they have to take ownership of it and understand the obligation of doing what's expected of you. These guys have come together, man, and you're right. A couple of players bringing in D Ford, bringing in Quan, they got faster, but they've gotten nastier. They really are a group that expects to go out and kind of inflict harm on the opponent, and that's the difference. They're bigger, stronger, faster, longer, but they're nastier. You touched on it.
Eric Davis, podcasting and covering the 49ers out west, longtime quality NFL player who had some great playoff games in a string together when he was in the league. Eric, as far as the rest of the season goes, I've been kind of refusing to buy in on San Francisco. I thought, it's only a couple. It's only three games. You know, that I watched that Steelers game in almost its entirety, and I think that gave me a sour taste in my mouth that they couldn't put that team away. But is this authentic now? I mean, do they have a chance to win a pretty good West with the Rams and the Seahawks?
They're 5-0. That's the thing I've been looking at. I started the year off just like everyone. Well, I'm not going to say everyone. There are a lot of people predicting this to be a double-digit win team, and I said I have to see because winning is a process. And you have to learn how to win and get accustomed to winning and expect to win just the same way some teams expect to lose. It starts to happen. It's a process as well. But this team, they're legitimate, man. This defense, what they do defensively is repeatable. You've seen it right now. And that's what I've been saying the entire year. After watching a couple of games, I was like, okay, this is not some type of fluke. They can play this type defense. And on offense, Kyle knows what he has. In his offensive line, it's a run blocking team. That front, they do it well. He has the tight backs that you can get a change of pace, but they can all catch the ball, run the ball within that stretch scheme. His quarterback, he knows that he doesn't have the strongest arm, but he has a quick release. And when his feet are where they need to be, his mechanics are right. He's an accurate quarterback, so he gets the ball out of his hands, and he's not expecting him to be the guy that's going to stand back and throw the ball 50 times and win. So it's all coming together. It's very good complementary football. So, yeah, I think this team, the way it's constructed right now, they got to get better, but they can compete with anybody, not just in the NFC West. This team can compete with anybody in the league right now.
Well, they don't have to compete with anybody. They got to get the Redskins this weekend, Eric. And the Redskins, I think, will be competing with the Bengals for the worst team on the 49ers schedule this year. What, if any, challenges do you think the Redskins might pose to this defense? I can't even ask that with a straight face. But just looking at both sides of the ball, what is the key so that the San Francisco 49ers don't get toppled here by one of the worst teams in the NFL?
Well, they have to – you saw last week versus Miami. They actually ran AD. I think that's what you need to do against the 49ers. The 49ers are a very fast team. If you plan on Case Keenum standing back there and throwing the ball 40 times, he's going to get killed. They can rush the passer. They are big and fast up front, and they're going to beat up your quarterback if you do that. I would try running the ball directly at them, not away from them. They are very fast. They're very fast and athletic, so come downhill the way you tried to do against Miami. I think that'll give you an opportunity to be able to make some plays. Minuski, what he does defensively, I think he can confuse. You can confuse the quarterback, and you can get Garoppolo in some situations that you've seen in a lot of games where he's still learning. He's got 15 games under his belt on the field. He sometimes throws balls into places that he was told to throw them, not necessarily because they're open on game day. He's still trying to figure out how, when the X's and O's move on the field, as opposed to staying still on paper, he's got to do the math a little bit faster to know where to go with the ball. So if you can disguise some things, you can get Jimmy in that way, and then I think you try to run the ball. That's what's going to have to happen to give yourself a chance against this team.
Eric, great intel on the Niners, helping us scout the opponent as we get ready for Week 7 at FedEx Field, Redskins, and the revenge game for Kyle Shanahan. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Eric.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Appreciate you, buddy. There's Eric Davis on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Next, we'll give you some of the best audio of the day. We'll get you a couple clips from Dante Whitner eviscerating members of the Redskins organization on the Junkies. Plus, we had Jay Gruden on today. That is a must-listen podcast. Give you a couple clips from that as well. And we'll make our predictions going into the weekend on The Fan.
The Washington Nationals are in the World Series for the first time in franchise history. Louisville Slugger's been making bats since 1884. BigTimeBats.com is releasing this Nationals World Series two-tone bat. You got to get it. The full-size bat has the team colors with the red barrel and blue handle and has the World Series and Nationals Curly W logos with that NL Champions logo laser engraved onto the bat. The full-size bat is limited to 5,000 individually numbered bats and sells for $129.95 plus shipping. Also available is the World Series team signature bat with the facsimile signatures of the players and the World Series and NL Championship logos. Both bats can be purchased in a stunning two-bat set. Just go to BigTimeBats.com now to order or call 866-280-BATS. That's 866-280-BATS for this historic Nationals first playoff series win bat. Trademarks and logos used with permission.
It has been quite a day on 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. Yes, it's a Football Friday. We are presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game and every bet for real sports fans. We're also multitasking and talking a lot about the Nats because it's Red October. Thanks to our friends at PVI Office Furniture, fast, excellent, affordable business grows with PVI. You can visit their showroom in Frederick, Maryland, or online, PVI.com today. Dante Whitner was on the Junkies today. Dante Whitner played for the Redskins for like 4 minutes in 2016. Long
Remember that?
Time. San Francisco 49er was brought in because Scott McLuhan had worked with him in San Fran.
Football bar.
And brought him in at the end of his career here in Washington to make some tackles and try to bring some lumber in the middle of the secondary. And he just lit fire to anyone and everyone who came up. Actually, it was funny. So they asked him one question after another, just killing him. And then JP was, and the Junks were like saying, okay, this is going well. Let's just keep throwing names out there for him to kill. And JP's like, what'd you think of Kirk Cousins? And he just was really nice. He's like, oh, I really liked Kirk Cousins. They're like, oh, that didn't go as planned.
Oh, huh. I didn't see that coming.
And then he liked, weirdly enough, Dan Snyder as well. But this is what Dante Whitner had to say about Josh Norman on the Junkies this morning.
Josh Norman was never accountable. He always used to cry to the defensive backs coach, oh, P. Talking about Perry Fuel. You know, and Perry Fuel let him get away with a lot of things.
Yeah.
Perry Fuel didn't hold everybody to the accountability level. He would get on young guys and talk bad to young guys. But when it came to guys that he knew was making a lot of money for the team, they could do whatever they want, and he would still go out there and take up for them. And that's where accountability issues come in, right? Everybody has to be accountable. We don't care if you're getting paid $80 million, and we don't care if you're getting paid $250,000. Everybody should be accountable on this football team. It was a time we were in quarters. Against the Carolina Panthers. And one of my high school teammates, Ted Ginn, was over there, right? And we playing quarters, which means I have number two vertical all the way to the goal line. Josh, you have number one vertical all the way to the goal line. If my number two doesn't go vertical and stops, I can help you. But don't depend on the help, Josh. It's what every coach tells you in the National Football League. So the number one route you get in that coverage is a post. They'll sit somebody down and get a post. Okay, I'm trying to get under it, Josh. Josh, this is your man. Josh looked at me like it's my fault.
Oh, he does.
You are a front runner. Don't do this for TV. You can go back and get it on the game. And I can tell you the exact coverage. Don't do this for TV, Josh. This is your man. That's an accountability issue.
I mean, when we club Josh Norman, we're just two guys in a studio. When a safety was on the field with him, does it goes a little further.
I'm listening to that. I'm mid-2000s, late-2000s. I'm Jersey Shoring it, shirtless fist pumping. I've accused him of doing that a billion times over, where everyone needs to know that it was someone else's fault on
that
a coverage.
Me.
Big arm out, big looking this way, big point at this, with hands on the hips, with an eye roll. Oh, you should have been there. You should have been there. Please do everything you possibly can to prevent the touchdown. Please do more. Please catch up.
I'm long over his act, but, you know, I've been at this with Josh Norman for 3 years now. Dante Whitner was here and gone in like 11 minutes, and he knew the score right away. He also is not a big fan of Greg Minuski. Now, Minuski was not the defensive coordinator when he was here. He was a linebackers coach, but he knows Minuski from his time here in the same defensive meeting rooms, and he's apparently, according to Whitner, studied the film coming up to this game against the 49ers because he does San Francisco media now. And he says that Greg Minuski just doesn't have a scheme that makes it look like he knows what he's doing.
If you put Greg Minuski in a room and said, teach me how to disguise a cover three and make it look like a cover four and make Tom Brady believe it, or show me a Tampa two or that looks like a single high coverage and manipulate Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, he would not be able to do that. He would not be able to do it. So how can you be a defensive coordinator if you don't know how to manipulate the best minds in the NFL? You can't be.
How do you know he doesn't know how to do that? I'm not questioning you. I just
because
like
they
more detail.
Been doing it.
Say again.
When I watch their film, I watch all their games this year.
Yeah.
They're not doing it. The safeties aren't showing certain coverages. I can look at the film and tell exactly what coverage they're playing every time. Why is that? And I'm an outsider.
Dante Whitner, just fire with the junkies. So we wanted to keep the train on the tracks and have a good guest of our own. So we got Jay Gruden on the show. And Gruden today, with about 22 minutes worth of content, is must listen. TheFanDC.com and GrantandDanny.com/audio for your podcasting needs. He covered the gamut. We talked about Dwayne Haskins.
Yep.
We talked about Dan and Bruce. But here was an interesting cut from Gruden when asked what people got wrong about, or maybe what about him that was said he thought was not correct?
Just about everything, probably. You know, I think you listen to all the callers or ex-players or what have you to call in, I'm sure you can find somebody that has some negative thing to say about you. But I feel like I'm my own person and did a pretty good job with the talent that I had. I did the best I could. You know, I tried to develop some young players. I wasn't too easy on the guys. We worked extremely hard. Guys were focused. The guys were detailed. The notion that I was too nice and too laid back, I think, is wrong. I think I was intense at times. I was hard on the guys at times. Yes, I was laid back at times, but for the most part, I did the best I could to get these guys ready to play and develop their skill set and make sure they developed into the best player they could possibly be. And at the end of the day, that was my job.
Let me get one more on Dwayne Haskins and whether or not he could ultimately be a stud. You know, if there's a chance he could end up being a really good player eventually. Here was Gruden on Haskins.
He's got a chance, dude, for sure. He's got the skill set. He's got a big, strong arm. He's got a great pocket presence. He can escape. But, you know, he's got a ways to go, you know, with a little bit of everything. You know, I think and that's the case with a lot of young quarterbacks. Some young quarterbacks are forced to play early. Some quarterbacks that have been great in the history of pro football didn't play until their second or third or fourth year. He's 22 years old. You know, quarterbacks are playing now in their 40s. So he's got a lot of time to develop, a lot of time to work, a lot of time to develop his skill set. As long as he works at it, knows he has to work at it, then he has a great chance to be a heck of a football player here for the Redskins.
If you missed Jay Gruden today, Terry McLaurin going back to Wednesday, or I loved our interview with Jim Bowden, who was the first GM of the Nationals yesterday.
Yeah, that was cool.
All right, here on Grant and Danny. Those podcasts, really worth your time. The whole show today, very good. TheFanDC.com. So call your shots. 5-0 San Francisco, 1-5 Washington. FedEx Field, 1 o'clock kick on Sunday. What's your score?
San Francisco 27, the Washington Redskins 10. I do think they managed some garbage time points. San Francisco will dominate for 60 minutes on Sunday.
49ers 31, Redskins 13. I think they will establish the run early.
Get it established.
They will establish it just enough to not score many points. And the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan will throw to set up the run because he operates in 2019, and they will have a lot more success doing that. So those are your predictions. How about ALCS? Does it end tonight?
I think it does. I think Justin Verlander on the bump. I think it's all curtains versus a Johnny Holstaff game probably for the New York Yankees. I think Verlander closes it out.
I'll give the Yankees, Aaron Boone's Savages.
Just one more time they fight?
I'll give them one more ride into that good night, and then they lose in game six.
I hope that's how it happens, by the way, because it probably means Garrett Cole pitches again, right?
Certainly possible. They could hold off of him until a potential game seven, knowing it would mean he could go in game one.
Uh-huh.
But you probably just want to end the thing while you can,
you
right?
You want to do that, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm pulling for the Yankees hard tonight like the rest of you. Caps play the Rangers as well. Check out NBC Sports Washington if you want to watch me pre and post. Danny, enjoy your weekend, buddy, and I look forward to talking World Series baseball with you next week.
It's a fun thing to be able to do, and our watch has ended.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.